Good evening and welcome to Pro Yaki This Week for the week of October 13th through the 20th, plus the 21st. The Central League Climax Series Stage 1 gets the headline this week. So we're leading off the week with the recently completed Central League Climax Series Stage 1. And as you already know by now, the Tigers' collapse was complete. After leading the Giants by as many as 13 games on July 8th, the Tigers fell apart in August and September to lose the pennant. And it was with a reverse momentum that Hanshin went into postseason play, where they really haven't done so well in the past several years. How poor has Hanshin been in postseason? Well, let's go back to the 2003 Nippon Series under the great leadership of Hoshino Kantoku. With a 3-2 advantage over the Fukuoka Daiei Hawks, the series returned to Fukuoka Dome, where the Hawks' Sugiuchi and Okamoto downed Irabu Fukuhara, Yoshino, and Ishige 5-1 to even the series up at 3 games apiece. Wada then threw a complete game 7 for a 6-2 victory and for the Japan Championship. Under Okada Kantoku, the Tigers were swept in 4 games by the Chibolote Marines in 2005, the Tigers scoring only 1, 0, 1, and 2 runs in games 1 through 4, respectively, compared to the Marines scoring 10 runs in each of the first 3 games, then narrowly getting past the Tigers 3-2 in the series finale in 2005. The introductory climax series in 2007 for the Central League saw the Tigers go 0-2 against these same Chunichi Dragons, although last year the roles were reversed, with the Dragons finishing the season in second place and the Tigers in third. Nagoya Dome had haunted the Tigers all season long and was probably the place they least wanted to deal with a playoff. So, here we are again in 2008, with the Tigers and Dragons squaring off at Kyocera Dome, while Koshien gets a bit of a makeover. For game number one, Ochiai Kantoku played the small ball card, getting a run across the plate in the first inning with a leadoff single by Lee, a bunt by Araki, and a ground out by Mori, then an RBI single by Woods. That one run would turn out to be the only one they needed, although a solo shot by Morino to lead off the sixth was nice insurance, as Kawakami scattered 4 hits through 7 innings. Asao got into and out of a jam in the 8th, and Iwase closed the door on the Tigers in the 9th to a Dragon 2-0 win. This made it 9 postseason losses in a row for the Hanshin Tigers. It just doesn't look like the postseason agrees much with Hanshin. But the Tigers' fortune turned around in Game 2. In the bottom of the first, a timely single by Kanemoto, followed by a 3-run home run by Toritani, gave the Tigers all they would need to break their postseason misfortune. Toritani, with just 13 home runs on the regular season, hit a solo shot in the Tigers' 3-run sixth inning. Also hit a solo shot in the Tigers' 3-run sixth inning. Hanshin went on to take the game 7-3. Then came the rubber match Game 3, last night, Yoshimi allowed just 4 hits while striking out 4 and walking none through 8 innings of work. A pair of errors by the usually sure-handed Araki and one by Yoshimi himself made things a little more tense at times than they should have been, although Toritani did help out by starting towards second and then getting tagged out at first after the overthrow in the second inning. You really don't see that very often. But Hanshin's Iwata threw even better than the Chunichi Yoshimi. Over 8 innings, Iwata allowed just 1 hit, walked 1, and hit a batter. That was Lee leading off the game. Koike pinch ran for him and stayed in the game in right field. And Iwata didn't suffer too much from a pair of errors at first, thanks to a pair of double plays. And you know, it really seemed like first base was located somewhere in the twilight zone last night, as the two teams combined for 4 errors at first. So, the ninth inning saw relief ace Fujikawa on the mound for the Hanshin Tigers. After allowing a pinch hit leadoff base hit to Tatsunami and a pinch runner Hidenori to advance to second on an Araki sacrifice, Fujikawa unleashed a wild pitch to put a runner at third base with just 1 out, but he did manage to get Morino to pop out to second for out number 2. Next up was Tyrone Woods. Fujikawa's no-strike, 3-ball pitch was up in the strike zone, and Woods couldn't hold up a check swing. Now, I don't know if Woods was baiting Fujikawa or what, but that seemed to really boost the Tigers' closer's confidence in his straight pitch. After another strike and with the count full, Fujikawa's Shobu pitch was swung on and hit deep to center field. Woods just stands there at home plate admiring the shot. There's little doubt about this one. Hi-ta! 2-run home run by Woods, and that puts the Dragons up 2-0. Wada followed that with a single before Nori popped out to right to end the inning, but the damage was done. The heart of the Tigers' order, Araki, Kanemoto, and Toritani, went down in order to Iwase in the ninth. Super closer Kyuji Fujikawa, baseball's child is what Kyuji literally means, closes out the 2008 season for the Tigers with just his second loss all year. His only loss during the season was a sayonara loss to Chunichi on May 4. And you know what the first thing the press starts asking him was? It was whether or not he'll be pursuing getting posted to the majors while he's still got some speed on his fastball. Anyway, you can get much more insight and candor about the Tigers at Christopher's Tiger Tales blog, right here at JapaneseBaseball.com. The review for this game, which wasn't up when I was writing this, should make some very interesting reading and commentary. I do so enjoy reading the comments on Christopher's blog almost as much as I enjoy reading what he has to write. And next, I'd like to take a short time to respond to a reader question. I got a writing question from Ken D. Ken asks, with Hiroshima's Matsuda owner and Marty Brown still yet to agree on a contract, can you tell us where the situation stands now, and your opinion on if and when the deal will happen? Well, apparently my teaser last week that Hiroshima's Brown Kantoku may be returning after all got some notice, but I didn't tell enough of the tale to allow people to take sides on the issue, and there really hasn't been enough information in English for others to know what's going on. But basically, Marty's agent issued 11 conditions under which the cart manager will return for 2009. The conditions were not made public, but Matsuda owner took offense to at least three of them, thinking that they were unreasonable. And he asked for clarification yesterday, October 20th, as part of his final notice, quote-unquote, on the matter. The CARP owner has set October 21st, today, as the deadline for an articulate response before he goes to the next phase, which most likely will be promoting Nigun manager Yamasaki Lyozo to fill the job. I know that I've said before that Brown Kantoku and Matsuda owner seem to have a really good relationship between them, whereas many owners, after a manager does a stunt like throw a base, would probably be suspending or fining or telling his manager to calm down. Matsuda owner had a whole bunch of T-shirts made for everybody on the team saying, "Beware, our manager throws bases." And it was just a really, really funny, great response. And I'm sure they sold a lot of T-shirts there in Hiroshima. They were really good-looking T-shirts, too. A kind of white shadow image of Brown Kantoku and a base on a red foreground. Great idea. And many of the things that Brown Kantoku has done would probably infuriate a lot of the owners, but Matsuda Kantoku has just gone with them and turned them into a positive. So to kind of hear Matsuda owner and Brown Kantoku not agreeing, and the whole feeling that I'm getting reading the newspapers about this is that Matsuda owner feels rather upset about Marty's demands, or Marty's agent's demands, which the only one that has been hinted at in the press is that he wants 2 years guaranteed. And here we go into the whole Kroon wants 2 years guaranteed thing again, and it's a very difficult problem to address. I understand that Brown Kantoku would like the guarantee. Job security is something that is very much appreciated. But I'm not entirely convinced that his results have earned it. I think that if he clears certain numbers, that the renewal should be automatic. And there again, it's very difficult. How much true influence does a manager have on a baseball team? Can he really make people start hitting the ball harder? Can he really get people to come through in the clutch? Is that really something that a manager has control of? And, you know, I've heard arguments both ways on the matter, and it's just a very, very difficult problem to address. In a way, I'm glad I'm not an owner or a general manager, because it would be something that I would really, really have to think hard about. And I want to support Brown Kontoku in his desire to have a multi-year contract and all. But I just haven't necessarily seen that he deserves it guaranteed. Like with Kroon, I know I was wrong, but I did not see that Kroon's knee was in any shape at the end of the 2007 season to guarantee him 2 years. I stand by what I said before. I think that Yokohama made the right decision to not guarantee it. It's just not something that would have made good sense to me. And so, you know, I'm maybe a bit more conservative with money, but I don't have any dreams of being wealthy, so. Anyway, that's where we stand going into today, and I do hope that I'll be able to bring you a conclusion either on next week's show or on the forums in one of the news categories. Hope that answers the question, and we'll move along to the Pacific League Climax Series, Stage 2. Game 1 of Stage 2 between the Fighters and the Lions saw the Fighters going into the game making a big to-do about the ground conditions at Omiya Stadium after they practiced there on Friday. The infield and outfield are full of potholes and other uneven surfaces, sometimes caused by regions where the grass didn't grow in or has been dug out by cleats over many years. For a team that relies heavily on their defense to keep things close, this was a major concern for Nippon Ham going into Game 1 at Omiya Kinei Kyujo, is it? However, such fears were completely unfounded. After all, when all the balls go sailing over your outfielders' heads or into the gaps, irregular bounds really don't matter that much now, do they? Glenn, who gave up just 66 earned runs all season long, surrendered 10 earned runs in 3-plus innings of Game 1. Glenn allowed 38% ground balls to 34% fly balls on balls in play during the regular season, 17% on ground balls and 44% in the air, the other 39% unknown, but mostly split between line drives and fly balls, going through the Lions order 2 times in Game 1. A solo home run by Sledge in the 5th, and an error single and 2-run double, also by Sledge, in the 9th, weren't nearly enough to overcome the 10 runs after 4 innings. So, Cebu takes the first round, 10-4. In Game 2, it's off to Cebu Dome for the remainder of the series, with Cebu up 2-0. That's including the freebie. But on the artificial turf, and under a dome, and with Darvish on the mound, this is Nippon Ham's game. Now, the Subamegun's Christopher Pellegrini already did say Yu Darvish was Yu Darvish for a lead-in describing this game. And Deanna did a blog entry entitled The Importance of Being Darvish. You know, I do really love her literary references. So, what can I say about Darvish that's left to use? How about Darvish was his brilliant self again, allowing just 3 hits and walking 3 while striking out 6 in a complete game, 5-0 shutout of the Lions. After all, you know, that's what happened. The Fighters managed to scrape out a run in the third inning when an 0-for-15 Morimoto got his first hit of the Climax Series. Still against Kishi, the Fighters topped off a 4-run fourth on number 9 batting Kaneko's 2-run home run to left. Mitsui, Iwasaki, Onuma, and Onodera worked the last 5 innings for Cebu, allowing just 3 hits. Onuma striking out the Fighters in order in the 8th. That was quite impressive by the Lions relief corps. But the Lions offense just couldn't get anything started against Darvish, dropping game 2 by a score of 5-0. The Fighters then evened up the series at 2-2 after the 3rd game, with Cebu starting with a 1-win advantage, when both teams' offenses really came alive. A leadoff double and a 2-out error plated 1 for Nippon Ham in the 2nd. Then, the Fighters batted around in the 3rd, capping off a 4-run inning with a 3-run home run by Sledge. The Lions answered with a pair of runs on a 2-out double by number 9 batting Akada in the 5th inning. Then they added another run on no hits in the 6th inning as a walk hit batsman and ground out and sacrifice fly made the score 5-3 in favor of the Fighters. But that's as close as the Lions got. It took 4 Lions pitchers to get out of the 8th inning, only allowing 1 run. Then Grauman allowed another run in the 9th inning. Michael wasn't his usual lights out in the bottom of the 9th, though, as he struggled to keep the Lions down to just 1 run, striking out Kataoka with 2 on to end the game 7-4. After the game, I really liked Sledge's hero interview. He spent most of it waving to fans and smiling between questions. I'm wondering, was that Deanna shouting at him the whole time he was there at the hero interview? So he was thinking, there's that stalker again. Nonetheless, the Lions no longer had the advantage, and both teams need to win 2 more. Darvish, expected to throw Game 6, is rumored to be ready to throw in Game 5 if necessary. And glancing up at my TV right now, I see that the Saitama Cebu Lions have won Game 4. So it's going to be kind of rocky for the Hokkaido Nippon Ham Fighters, who now need to win the next 2, no room for error, and we may be seeing Darvish after all coming up tomorrow. I was only able to really watch the very beginning of tonight's game, And Sweeney got off to a real rocky start, allowing 4 runs in the bottom of the first inning. Then, a little while later, Okwadi-kun really impressed me. Now, he may not have the body of someone who looks like he can run fast or someone who can dive for balls, but he does it. He does it all. Coming home from first base on a hit to left field, diving at a ball hit up the third baseline, grabbing the ball and throwing the batter out at first. Now, I know his nickname is a tease on his love for food and, consequently, his size. But let me tell you, Nakamura has more speed and dexterity than most of the slim infielders that you see out there. He is fun to watch. Still, I'll have a full review of Game 4 and the remaining games next week on Pro Yaki Live. As for this evening, that's it. I'd like to thank you all for joining me this evening, live or via podcast. Pro Yaki Live is a production of JapaneseBaseball.com and is distributed under the Creative Commons license. You may copy, redistribute, rebroadcast in whole or in part in any way you wish, provided that you give credit to JapaneseBaseball.com. This has been Michael Westbay, your host. Have a good one. Good night.